You'd like to turn to Luke 22, our first passage will come from there this evening. So good to see each of you. Thank you so much for your support throughout this meeting. On Sunday, in Lesson 1, we talked about the true definition of happiness and having the right perspective on happiness and indeed on life. In our second lesson, we talked about setting realistic standards for ourselves and living without fear. And our third lesson on Sunday talked about enjoying our life, enjoying our work, enjoying our play, enjoying our time, and taking time to be alone with God. Then Monday night we talked about the value of suffering. And then last night we talked about hindrances to serving. And now we've come to our final night, and we'll talk about serving some more. And I must begin by thanking the Hamilton family, each of them, for being so good to me and serving me in so many ways this week, and indeed all of you. And I appreciate so much the focus. I think this is one of the most attentive groups that I have been around, and I appreciate that very much. It shows in the songs and prayers and in your comments, and I really, really do appreciate that very much. Rather than extend long remarks for thank you. I just want to cover it all by saying God bless you and keep you as you pursue Him. And enjoy and rejoice in every day of your life. And I will see you again. Maybe not in this life, but for sure in the life to come. I have to push it the other way. Come on. Give me one slide back now. Okay. Suppose you woke up one morning after being blind all your life and you could see. Annie Dillard, in her book Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, has a chapter called Seeing. And in this chapter she recounts stories from surgeons who performed cataract surgeries. The stories of hundreds of people who had been blind since birth, who, after the surgery, could see. The surgeons told about the confusion their patients had, and we won't go into detail. It makes a big difference how old you are because of brain activity. But many of their patients had a lot of trouble with concepts such as space and depth. Things as simple as shadows were terrifyingly unnerving to some. Interestingly, there were basically two responses: fear and amazement. One father was dejected to find his 21-year-old daughter shutting her eyes to walk around the house, especially on the stairs. And her doctor wrote, quote, "She is never happier or more at ease than when, by closing her eyelids, she relapses into her former state of blindness." Other patients embraced their new sight. One was astonished by his own hand and just kept flexing it back and forth and back and forth. Another girl was so overcome by the brightness that she kept her eyes shut for 2 weeks. But when she opened them again, even though she didn't recognize any of the objects, she gazed with astonishment at everything and kept praising God, saying, "Oh God, how beautiful." Another little girl was taken outside to a garden and stood speechless in front of a tree, not knowing what it was until she touched it. And she called it the tree with the lights in it. So many applications we could make to spiritual sight and blindness, but wouldn't it be amazing if we could see God's power and beauty? Well, in one respect, we can see that with our earthly eyes. But in another respect, we could if we didn't have spiritual cataracts fogging our vision. Wouldn't it be awesome if we could look at God with fresh eyes, as if for the first time? I believe we can. As you see, I've subtitled my lesson, The Amazing Results of Serving Others. Do you believe that serving others will bring about amazing results? Maybe you're thinking, I don't know, Brother Oscar, amazing? I don't know. Well, let's see. Serving others helps us see God. Luke 22, verse 25. Jesus said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. Think about that. The Lord of the universe not only became human and dwelled among us, but then dwelling among us as a human being, he humbled himself farther by serving us. No wonder he said the greatest in the kingdom is the servant. When we serve, we are like him, and in that spiritual sense, we see him. John makes it even clearer in 1 John. 1 John 4:11. Dear friends, since God loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. John 3:16 and 17. John defines love for us. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. For whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? I think it's interesting that John uses the word for to begin, or but to begin verse 17. Lay down your lives for your brethren. Well, how about starting with a little hospitality and benevolence? Verse 17. This is a subject, of course, that John comes back to again and again and again. And I personally am convinced, because of my own experience, that many people don't have a close relationship with God because they're not serving other people. And if they would serve other people more, they would have a much closer relationship with God. And in fact, I think John basically says, you can't have a close relationship with God without serving other people. Seeing God, isn't that an amazing result of serving? But there's another amazing result, and that is that we help others to see God. We let our light shine. Matthew chapter 5. There's a story about an American soldier after World War II. And one of the saddest sights was the orphans in the cities of the European countries. And one day, one of the American soldiers after the war happened to be walking by a bakery. He saw one of the little orphan boys looking through the window as they were making the pastries and setting them on the shelf and salivating. And he walked up to him and he said, "Son, would you like one of those?" He looked up and said, "Mister, I sure would." The soldier went in the store and he came out with a dozen. Gave it to the boy, turned to leave. When he felt a little tug on his coat, he turned around and the boy looked up into his eyes and said, "Mister, are you God?" When we serve others, people see God in us. And that's as it should be. We are His hands, as one of our songs says. We are His feet. And we are to let His light shine through us. Surely that is an amazing, amazing result of serving. Have you ever gone through times when God seemed hidden? Perhaps it was the worst of times. And God just seemed not there. David asked God in Psalm 44, verse 24, "Why do you hide your face?" Even the great Christian apologist C.S. Lewis wrote after his wife died of cancer, "Where is God?" This is one of the most disquieting symptoms. Go to Him when your need is desperate, when all other help is vain, and what do you find? A door slammed in your face, and the sound of bolting and double bolting on the inside. After that, silence. You may as well turn away. The longer you wait, the more emphatic the silence will become. There are no lights in the window. Maybe you're thinking, "Wait a minute, Mr. Lewis, you went a bit too far. You crossed the line." David wrote in Psalm 10 and in verse 1, "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" Well, I won't pretend to know all the answers. In just a moment, I'm going to read from Jeremiah 29. But maybe it seems like God isn't there because we're looking for Him in the wrong place. And maybe that's His way of trying to get us to stop looking in the same well-worn ruts and paths that we were looking at before, and get back to a basic love for God and who He is. God said through Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 29, verse 13, "You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." So maybe when we don't see God, and I'm not accusing David, I'm not accusing C.S. Lewis, but maybe sometimes we don't see God because we're withholding a little bit of our heart from Him. And if we would just seek Him with all of our heart, we would find Him. And I propose that this evening that one sure place to find God is serving others. And when we're serving others, we're always going to find God there. I don't want you to see that yet. I want you to indulge me in a short mental exercise. If you had to summarize yourself, who are you? If you had to answer that question in 5 or 6 words, how would you do? 5 or 6 words to sum up who you are. You might say you're a student, a parent, a plumber, a spouse, whatever. Some of us might tell what we do, store manager at Taco Bell. But at the beginning of several of Paul's letters, he gives his identity as Paul, a bond servant of Christ. The word servant in these passages means one born into slavery. And I can't help but wonder if Paul is seeing himself as one born again in baptism into slavery to Jesus. Oddly enough, being a servant or a slave to this master is liberating. What if we began to describe ourselves as servants, as slaves of Jesus Christ? How would that affect how we relate to others? I suggest that if we started thinking of ourselves that way, it became a natural way for us to think, "I'm a servant, I'm a slave, that it would free us to really serve other people, because we would understand that that is our identity. All right, here's my simple proposition. God is love, and God translated that love into service. We are called to love, therefore we should translate that love into service. I doubt that you would deny that proposition. But nevertheless, let's take it one at a time. God is love. 1 John 4:8. And the proof of His love is demonstrated in a variety of ways, but the ultimate way is in serving our greatest needs. Romans 5 and verse 8, God demonstrated His own love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Simple proposition, simple statement. He is love. And He translated that love into service, Romans 5 verse 8. Or John 3:16, God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. In Matthew 20:28, Jesus makes it still clear. This was one of the main verses we kept coming back to last night. That Jesus did not come to be served, but to serve. And thus He demonstrated His love through us, for us, through service. Maybe obvious, but it's important. But now let's make the application to ourselves. We also are called to love. It's interesting, isn't it? The reason why John defined God as love in 1 John 4 verse 8. It's one of the first verses I memorized. One of the first verses I had my kids memorize, because when they're two, they can memorize, or part of the verse, I should say, God is love. They can memorize that easy. And it's a good thing for them to know. But why did John tell us that? 1 John 4 verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. The reason he said God is love is to convince us to love each other. Jesus has gathered us on the highest mountain. Hebrews 12. The only place of true praise and worship. We have come to Mount Zion, to the holy city, to myriads of angels. He translated us out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of His beloved Son. He seated us with Him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. He's done all this work to exalt us, to put us on Mount Zion, and now we need to let our lights shine from that city on a hill. And part of that is serving others. In the 2nd century AD, a Roman satirist named Lucian despised all religion. And he despised Christianity. But he wrote this about Christians. Quote, "It is incredible to see the ardor with which the people of that religion, Christianity, help each other in their wants. They spare nothing. Their first legislator has put into their hearts that they are all brethren." Thus, the second century disciples fulfilled John 13, verse 35. "By this the world will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Serving is really a powerful witness of love. I believe it's the most powerful witness of love there is. Beyond that, of course, in Matthew 5:44, Jesus calls us even to love our enemies. Now, I personally think we Americans have a bit of difficulty with that, because we don't seem to have very many personal enemies when it comes right down to it, and you really think about it. So maybe we could start a little smaller. Maybe we could start by being kind to great, ungrateful and cranky people, like those who cut in line in front of us, or who won't let us on the interstate, or who pull into a parking space before we do. Or one of my personal pet peeves, standing in line at Walmart while the person in front of you has all of their huge basket checked out and hasn't even begun to write the check. What do they think the line's for? All the checking out time is for. Start your check so you just have to fill in the... Silly, aren't you? We can be kind. Serve others. And we need to translate our love into service. We've been emphasizing Matthew 20:28. But there are lots of verses in Matthew and Mark and Luke which talk about serving. Matthew 23:11 is just another one. Sounds just like the ones we've read. The greatest in the kingdom would be the servant. Back in 1 John, John wrote that the only way to truthfully claim the love of God is to love our brethren, and that love is shown in serving. 1 John 3:17, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth. You see, when I love enough to serve, I reflect the love of God. Ronald Reagan said, we make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. Pretty good. With each decision you make this week, stop and ask this simple question. Jesus, am I being generous? Now, when we hear the word generous, we tend to think of money, but that's only one of the many ways we can be generous. Sure, be generous with your money, but be generous with your time. Be generous with your forgiveness. Be generous with your mercy. Be generous with your abilities, for they were given to us to serve. Have you ever been typing or maybe writing, and you spell a word, you write out a word, and you look at it and go, that just doesn't look right. And you know that's how it's spelled, but it just doesn't look right. I don't know what's going on in our mind when that happens. But I wonder what's happened to the word love. Because he's really perverted what the meaning of the word is. We love a particular movie. We love our pet turtle. We love to go fishing. We love hardwood floors. We love double chocolate cappuccinos. I pick out things that I love, see? It'd probably be better if, like the Greeks, we had different words for love. The Bible word love that we're talking about is, well, the noun is agape. And you can't agape anyone without action. Agape involves action. Agapao is the verb. It implies action. It's an action verb. And since love is so misused, I'll suggest another experiment for you. What if we substituted the word serve for love? What would happen to our vocabulary, to our speech? And I think that's legitimate. We've looked at a lot of verses in the last two nights that connect inextricably love with service. So let's just swap out words. Would we keep on saying, I love my friend's Mustang. I serve my friend's Mustang. Or, I serve chocolate cake. Well, if you're serving it, perfect. More importantly, would it make a difference in the way we live if instead of saying, I love my wife, I said, I serve. We need to translate love into service. When we do, we will see amazing results. And one of the amazing results that we will see is that it makes our life matter. We're going to, I'm off the screen. We're going to look at first at John 13 in just a moment. Bob Green, in his best-selling book, Duty, talks about returning to Columbus, Ohio to be with his dying father. And after his father died, Green took up, connected with an 84-year-old man named Paul Tibbetts. He was also a World War II veteran, as his father had been, and a pilot who had survived 25 missions over Europe. In fact, flew the B-59 that dropped the first atomic bomb. And so Green spent many afternoons talking with Tibbetts and asking him about the World War II generation, trying to make some sense out of the emotional distance that he felt between him and his father. And as they were talking, he talked about what a great man his father was, a decorated veteran. He had won the Bronze Star for leading platoons of infantrymen through deadly, ghastly battles in France. In one conversation, Green wondered out loud if the war years were the best years of his dad's life. Tibbetts said, "Could be. Your dad was very satisfied with what he was doing. He told himself that he was in the war for his family and for his country. And he was surrounded by men who were telling themselves the same thing. It wasn't comfortable, it wasn't fun, but there was never a day when you thought that what you were doing didn't matter." I got to tell you, when I read that sentence, I thought to myself, that's what I want. I want to know that never a day goes by that what I'm doing doesn't matter. And when I'm serving others, I know it matters. They may not be grateful. They may reject the Lord Jesus, but what I'm doing is still, it still matters. Because I'm making the world a better place. And more importantly, it honors God. After washing the disciples' feet, Jesus said, "I have set an example for you that you should do as I have done for you. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." See, knowing isn't enough. We're blessed, we're happy, we can find joy when we do the things that we know God wants us to do. John 13:17 used to be a verse that I quoted a lot in my sermons. But most of the time I wasn't really thinking what was the context. And the context is serving other people. It's not enough to know I'm supposed to serve. I have to serve. I have to be active. There are few blessings in life greater. And that means there's few things that bring more happiness than knowing my life matters. I think it's too bad for Mr. Green's dad that after he came home from the war, he didn't discover that he could still keep serving. He could still keep serving his family. He could still keep serving his country, just in different ways. And that's a lesson to me, and I hope it's a lesson to you. Maybe there's a particular skill that you know you have, a particular talent that you can serve other people, and you're using that. It might be taken away from you one day. If it is, find another way. Don't just give up. So many people do that. When their primary function in serving and making others happy is taken, they just fold up tent and go away. A visitor to your assemblies last night told me how he just recently had started playing the guitar in nursing home. See, you never get too old, time never goes by that you can't find a new way to serve. Isn't that an amazing result? Serving others makes your life matter. Serving others also protects you from sin. You know, temptation is not really about a particular sin. Rather, it's about shifting the focus of my attention and affection. It's about subtly convincing me to change my purpose for living. That's what Satan convinced Eve to do. Think about yourself, Eve. Don't worry about God. Don't worry about Adam. Just think about yourself. Change your purpose. That's what Satan tried to get Jesus to do in Matthew 4 and Luke 4. Change your purpose. Take the easy way. We need to understand that temptation is not about having one single affair in your whole life. It's not about looking at one more website we ought not to be looking at. It's not even about playing hours and hours of video games or fishing or playing your favorite sport or golf. No, it's about distracting us. Distracting us from our true mission. Distracting us with sin, or maybe not even sin. What might otherwise be a harmless diversion, but it diverts us from our true purpose and our true destiny, because we are fulfilling our true destiny when we serve. Our true destiny is to love. Matthew 22, verse 36 through 40, the lawyer comes to Jesus and asks him, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And he says, the greatest commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In Galatians 5 and in verse 13, Paul wrote, you, my brothers, were called to be free. But do not use your freedom as an opportunity to sin. Rather, serve one another in love. Isn't Paul saying here that our destiny is to serve? You've been set free. Why? To serve. Serve other people. What if we had the attitude of Jesus, that we were not here to be served, but to serve? How would that change the way we respond to temptation? See, temptation would mean nothing to us, because I'm not here for that. I'm here to serve. And sin never goes along with serving anyone. It always harms not only ourselves, but many other people. There's something it took me a long time to realize. There is no sin that I can commit that is so private that it doesn't harm other people. There isn't any such thing. Why? Because even if I'm in the most remote part of the earth, and my sin only takes place in my mind, I have nevertheless diminished who I am. And when I diminish who I am, I can't give as much to others. Or what I give has been soiled. When we think of ourselves as servants, we have the amazing result of avoiding a lot of temptation. And finally, serving others helps us understand the temporal nature of physical life. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 15 is a familiar passage to you. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. I like the paraphrase in the New Living Translation. We all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as on the day we were born. We can't take our riches with us. Liz Altman became the vice president of Motorola. But years before that happened, she found herself overwhelmed working on her master's degree. She told a friend that she was having trouble with her master's thesis. And she was having trouble finishing her classes. And she was having trouble with all these job interviews. And she was having trouble doing a host of other things. And as she is explaining all the trouble and turmoil in her life, her friend said, "You been snowboarding lately?" Liz went ballistic. She said, "Snowboarding? Have you been listening to me? I haven't written chapter 2 of my thesis yet. I've got 10 interviews, all these people are annoying me, I've got all these classes, and you are plainly not listening to me." Her friend said quietly, "Liz, you've never worked very well that way." She went snowboarding that weekend. And as she was sliding down the slope, thinking of nothing but the cool mountain air, a solution to the major problem of her thesis came into her mind. Enjoy life. And encourage others to enjoy life. Because you see, we learned, I hope, in lesson 2, that there's something spiritual about enjoying even the ordinary blessings of life. And when we're not, we're probably not thinking very well. And we're probably not serving others very well. Because we're not enjoying the life God gave to us. How can I help others enjoy their lives? After all, I can't take it with me. Anything that I'm doing of a physical nature is temporal, and much of Ecclesiastes deals with this issue. But when I'm serving other people, I'm not just doing something physical. I'm not doing something temporal. I'm doing something eternal when I serve. How wonderful and amazing it is to be blessed to be involved in spiritual, eternal activities like serving others. Serving others helps me see God. It gives meaning to my life, protects me from sin, and helps me see what is really important. Amazing, isn't it?